Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast, hosted by English language arts teacher Michelle Waters. Prepare to receive strategies, products, and expert advice tailored to help teachers build social awareness, student agency, and voice in their ELA classrooms.
Welcome to Rethink ELA podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Waters, and I'm super excited to interview an English teacher who values daily writing time in his classes. Scott Baer is a 6th through 12th grade English language arts instructional specialist and English 12 teacher at Montgomery County Public Schools in Rockville, Maryland. He blogs at Seeing the Forest for the Trees and can frequently be found at hashtag APLitChat on Twitter. He also co-founded hashtag APBKChat, which has recently changed to hashtag TheBookChat, which will debut on Twitter in March. Now, I noticed that Scott shared a blog post some time ago about the daily notebook time in his class, and I was fascinated. This time is what I refer to in my class as quick writes. Basically, he sets aside a few minutes at the beginning of every day for students to write. But that's where our processes diverge. And when I read about what he does with his students to encourage more writing, critical thinking, and revising and editing processes, I knew I had to interview him. So we will be right back in just a few moments.
When it comes to reaching students through literature, finding reliable resources is challenging. Your search is over. Rethink ELA Podcast is here to provide student-tested, research-based strategies, products, and advice. Here's your host, Michelle Waters.
Welcome back to Rethink ELA. I'm Michelle Waters, and I am interviewing Scott Baer, who I introduced earlier. We're talking about notebook time, and it is a topic that is near and dear to my heart as a writing teacher. And I noticed that Scott had a really amazing article online, and so I thought I would interview him and ask some questions. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Michelle. It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, let's go ahead and get started with our questions. And I know the answer to this, and you know the answer, but maybe some of our newer teachers don't. Why is it so important that students write frequently in class, and what is considered enough?
So writing is so important for many reasons, and I kind of think of it, I currently have seniors, and I kind of think of it in three ways. It's to develop their critical thinking skills, because writing not only lets them figure out what they think, but it also demonstrates what they think. It allows them to lift up their voices, to be heard in ways that they didn't think that maybe they were going to be recognized before. And it's also something that is hypercritical to careers. You know, the job that you want and the job that you get is often divided by your ability to communicate, specifically in writing. And we see that in all manners of fields. If you want to ascend, the career ladder as an engineer, you can be a great engineer, but if you can't communicate to non-engineers, you can only go but so far. And so writing is really important in all careers that are ahead of our kids.
Absolutely. And I love the fact that you mentioned an engineer, because my husband is a facilities engineer, and that's an example I use with my students all the time.
Yeah. We sometimes think the sciences and maths and things like that don't need to write, but communication in those fields is just as important as any other field.
Absolutely. So what is considered enough writing in an English class?
You know, that's really hard to say. I mean, everyone has different curricular requirements and different, things in their district that they must do in their classrooms on a day-to-day basis. You know, the more writing, the better. For me, it's essential that my kids write every single day. And I know that, you know, in a lot of classes, in a lot of English classes, we're not seeing that. There's a lot of focus on literature, which is very important. But for me, it's critical that they write every day. And so I've always had kids write. But it wasn't until last summer when I read Writing with Mentors by Rebecca Odell and Allison Marchetti that it really made sense to me to do this in a more pragmatic way, in a way that would invite students to the writing table rather than push them away, and to give them a lot of choice in the things that they were doing in the classroom. So now my kids write 10 minutes a day. Which obviously could be more, but there's a lot of other stuff that we do. And 10 minutes is a minimum for notebook time. There's often other time in class that we're doing other types of writing. But for notebook time with this structure, I know that they're writing 40 minutes every week. and that they're revising every week. And so when we look over the course of, you know, a quarter or a semester or a year, they're writing for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours.
Absolutely. So it sounds like reading, writing with mentors is really the catalyst that changed things in your class. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. That book really just helped me. It was one of those things where, you know, if you're looking at an object and you just turn it ever so slightly, you see a totally different thing. And so when I read this, and it's just one section, Writing with Mentors is a really great book. It's really interesting. It's really kind of a new lifestyle as a teacher in your way that you run your class. But just this part, just notebook time, really just opened up my eyes into the ways that I could provide consistent structure with consistent choice and really be able to elevate student voices.
So what does that structure look like in your class? You said 10 minutes of writing time, but is it kind of the same thing every single day, or is there some difference each day?
So there are three mentor texts, or I'll explain what that is in a second, three every week. And so Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, each day they engage, students engage for 10 minutes with a text. The text may be a photograph, it may be a chart, it may be a few lines of a poem or a song. It could be anything. Tuesday of this week, we had Monday off for President's Day. We watched a video. It was the first time we watched a video, but I added that element in. They're always short, or, you know, if it's a painting, you know, it's just one thing to look at, because the 10 minutes of writing includes the reading of the text. Obviously, when we read a visual text, it's a different type of reading, but it's still reading. And so they come in on Monday, they have a painting, for example, they write about that painting for 10 minutes in any way they see fit. And this is a lot of where the choice comes in. They can write an analysis, they can write an argument, they can write a narrative, they can write a poem, they can write a song. They are allowed to interact with that painting critically, thinking critically and creatively, just as you or I or any other teacher would when we go to an art museum and we're looking at a Winslow Homer painting. And what does it make us think of? That's the thing that I really want you to write about. Okay. So then they come in Tuesday, and there's a quote from a book that we're reading, for example, one of the books, and maybe they write about that text, you know, for 10 minutes, same thing, all the choices that they have in front of them. And then Wednesday, there's a graph. So there's some data. So they have to interact with that. And again, they can respond to it as they wish.
So on these 3 days, do they have some time built in to discuss what they see or what their thoughts are with each other?
So I don't have that built in. I try to pick something that I think that is challenging, but that they can discern, you know, at least some level of meaning from. Our sharing, our discussion usually comes after they've written, because I really want them to engage with their own ideas first, in this certain circumstance. So we often share what we have written in various ways, small groups, pairs, with the whole group, in a shared Google Doc where everyone can comment on it, something like that. But for this structure, I do that after they've written. So then, just to sort of finish out the week, so on Thursdays, we do something, we learn something about writing in that 10-minute block. So it's something really small, and I guess I'll talk about this a little bit later, but Thursday's a learning day, and then Friday, they pick one of the three. So again, another element of choice, they pick one of the three that they liked, that they were interested in, that they really want to go back to. They use that 10 minutes to revise that piece, and then they submit that one for a grade.
Awesome. I love that idea. I love the amount of choice that you have built in to this process. That being said, what problems did you face when you worked on implementing this kind of writing in your classes?
So this is my first year doing this structured notebook time. And I'm in a bit of an interesting position, because 18 months ago, a year and a half, I left the classroom after 15 years in the classroom, and I became an instructional specialist, which means in my current position, I work with teachers from 70 different schools. We have a very, very big district, obviously.
Yes.
One of my jobs last year was to rewrite the English 12 curriculum. And so I did. And conceptually, I thought it was great. But I told my boss, I need to go teach it to make sure that it's what kids really need in the classroom. So I have only one class on top of my full-time instructional specialist. We'll have one class. I'm just piloting this whole idea. And so I have a class that's solely comprised of students of color. They're all impacted by interrupted educations and poverty. 20% of my class has been in this country for four or fewer years. Half of them are non-native English speakers. And so they haven't seen themselves as writers, among other things. And so when I first did this, and I asked them in the beginning to write 100 words, and there was almost a mutiny. Like, literally, we all laugh about it now, but literally half of the kids yelled something out. Like, 100 words? I can't do that. That's too much. One kid just yelled, hell no. And so, I laugh about it now because, teachers, we say 100 words. Like, I was actually picking that number because it's a really small number. But they were not that into it. But the walls came down pretty quick because, Monday through Wednesday, the writing is really low stakes. You're not searching for the right answer. You don't have to feel pinned in an academic way, especially when, English is not your first language or you don't see yourself as a student. You get to do a very real life thing, and you just get to experience something and you get to respond to it. And then as a student, you get to pick later in the week which one that you would like to submit, but first you get to revise it. So, the walls came down pretty quickly. They also were quite engaged in the texts. They weren't used to coming in and seeing, a picture of a basketball player or two lines from a song that they know and they listen to, And so they were interested in writing these things. And the fact that, they could write an analysis or an argument or a narrative, they could go at it as they saw fit. Those walls came down pretty quick.
So it sounds like you chose prompts or artifacts that were relevant to them, and you've also built in choice. What are some other methods that you have for encouraging students who already hate writing to do more of it?
And really, the thing is feedback and feedback and feedback. It again, the low stakes and the changing of the text, it's never the same thing. Every week there's three new texts. And the choice helps, but every student needs something different. I had a student who just never used a period ever and just would write and never used a period. And I said to him, you should use a period, and here's where, and here's why. And he just wasn't that into it. So I said, okay, well, how about this? How about if you're not ready to use a period, don't use a period. Why don't you break your writing up into lines where you think there might be like a natural break? And so he said, okay, I'll try that. So now he's writing like these really great poems.
Wow.
And, now he's occasionally using periods, which is nice, mm-hmm. but I had to take it another route to kind of bring him to the table. And so he said, okay, I'll do that.
So instead of trying to change the student's grammar, you just gave him a different format that worked with what he was already doing.
Because again, like, the grammar is important, obviously. And there are times on Thursdays when we talk specific grammar. But again, for me, this is about enhancing their thinking skills. This is about exercising their brain in different ways that they, often aren't asked to in an academic setting.
Absolutely. So you've mentioned that you have prompts and other mentor texts for Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And as a teacher who's kind of starting on this journey as well, one of the areas I struggle is finding those mentor texts. So how can teachers find those texts that they can use to give students?
So I need three every week. And so I try to have one that connects to their world directly, like in the now. Like, we had one from Charlottesville. We've had one from Black Lives Matter. We've had one, before Florida, but we recently had one that was a chart about guns. Mm-hmm. And so, those things are immediate to their lives. But I also try to have one that connects to the world, but not necessarily their world, because this course is inquiry into the global experience. Mm-hmm. And so I want them to kind of see out also and see different things. So I've used, just various things. There was a photograph of some Syrian soldiers that was just, really captivating in its own artistic way. There was a painting of a a celebration festival taking place in India that was just filled with these gorgeous colors. And so it's, you know, some of the things are meant to be running parallel to their own lives, and some of the things are meant to be tangential. And then I usually try to do something that relates to a book. For instance, we're just starting Hamlet. And so I had this, I found this weird chart, and I Googled just weird things like chart about death, because there's a lot of that coming in Hamlet. And I found this chart that was really interesting. And it was a survey of how different people from different countries feel about leaving a financial burden on their family or living a long time. And my kids were like, this is so interesting. Like for Japanese people, living a long time is not an important thing. But for Brazilian people, it's the most important thing. So they just engaged in these really interesting conversations where they get to kind of, you know, see what's happening in the world, but also that's very connected to the text that we're reading. And this just occurred to me last week. And so my kids are actually doing it this week. I've just decided this week, one of their tasks is they have to find mentor texts. And so they have been doing this now. They know what kind of texts we're using. And so I said, everyone's got to find one. It's got to be the one that you would want to write on. You know, I put a few criteria out there. But then they're going to submit them all to me tomorrow. And then I'm going to have a stockpile of 24 of them to use for the rest of the year. So I'll pick it out. I'll put it on whatever Tuesday of 2 weeks from now. And this will be Juan's, and I'll put his name on it. And everyone in the classroom will write to Juan's mentor text.
Excellent. So we've talked about how to find those mentor texts. We've talked about kind of encouraging them to write more. So we've moved along now to Thursday, where we have those mini lessons. How do you determine and develop those mini lessons?
So I really want to maintain that sense of choice. I really want to have them do something that is about their writing. Because too often in my past, and I'm sure a lot of teachers feel this, over the weekend, you grade a million papers and you feel like you wrote run-on everyone's paper. And so Monday you say, I'm going to teach every kid run-ons. But in reality, you didn't write it on everyone's paper. You wrote it on like 25% of the papers. But 75% of the kids, are the other 75%, are still going to get that lesson. And so what I've tried to do via the feedback is have the kids identify some areas of needs. One of the things that I love about this process, and we'll talk a little bit about the tech later, is that when I give them feedback via a Google Doc, then they have to respond to my comment. So it's sort of an ongoing conversation rather than I leave a comment in pen on a piece of paper and then they throw the piece of paper away.
Right. And that's exactly what we do as well.
Right. Yeah. It's just really helpful to have that conversation ongoing.
Yes.
And that cycle of feedback. But so one of the things that, you know, was grammar based is I had created an interactive Google Slides presentation. I found this via Twitter and then via YouTube, where you can make an interactive slides presentation that's kind of like a choose your own adventure. And so I made one where there was run-ons, fragments, or other. And so you had to go back through, you know, it was like the first 4 weeks of notebook time. Mm-hmm. And if I had, you know, you had to find all the things that said either run on fragment or other, and you had to add them up. And whichever one was the most, that was the one you were supposed to start with. You could go back and do the other paths later. But basically, it was an interactive presentation that would allow kids to be helped in the ways that they needed to be helped. Rather than me forcing run-ons on everybody when some of the kids needed it.
During that 10 minutes, then, it's not you standing there presenting a lesson. They are going out and finding what they need. Is that correct?
Yes. So all I do is I push the presentation out to them, mm-hmm. and then I circulate and I help them, you know, make sure they understand what they're seeing, ask any, you know, answer any questions that they have, and really just kind of try to reinforce the learning so that they can see the growth in their own writing.
So it's kind of a student-led lesson at that point. They know that they go to that interactive slideshow, they find what they need, and then I assume that they then implement what they've learned into their writing for that week?
Correct. And so, you know, that's just a very sort of grammar thing. Like I do, I really like to work at the sentence level. Mm-hmm. With kids, you know, so often when we think about how do we instruct or first of all, if we are instructing kids on how to revise, or if we just say revise your paper. But often when we say, when we do instruct, we focus on sort of the low hanging fruit, like, oh, you can organize your paper by turning this into a paragraph, and this is a different paragraph. So I'm really trying to work with kids at the sentence level. So there's some other things that I have that help kids just see patterns, because I don't spend a lot of time teaching generative grammar terms or definitions. But if you have, you know, some patterns of here's what sentences look like when they start with a subordinating conjunction. And no, you don't have to know what the definition is, but you know all the subordinating conjunctions. So then you just have to think about what does it mean when you start a sentence with although versus because, and you have that thing, and then there's a comma. So it's really about like emulating or imitating the patterns that they see. Mm-hmm. And then they can kind of take their own sentences and say, oh yeah, this is an opinion sentence, so I really do want to have a because. And even though I was told that I can't start it with because, I can if I follow this pattern. And so just again, it kind of goes back to that thinking of like, what is my thought process in this sentence and how do I make it most clear to my audience?
Absolutely. So we've talked about the feedback system that's built into Google Docs and having conversations. And so it sounds like you must have a one-to-one Chromebook class. How does that process look compared to a traditional classroom or one with limited technology?
This is my first year with Chromebooks, and I just decided I'm just going to dive all in and just go for it. And so, you know, it's sort of me modeling my risk-taking, and I have open conversations with this about kids because I screw it up. And, you know, that's okay. Yes. And sometimes they help me figure it out. And so it's nice the way that I do it because it's all on one document. I like it because, you know, when I have like this Winslow Homer painting, it's in full color and kids can zoom in on a part or zoom out or, you know, I like it. But you don't have to have tech. You know, you don't need the full color, probably.
Right.
Most teachers don't have color printers. You don't get the full color, but you can certainly do this. And I did this in similar ways in the past. You know, you just think about, you know, what do you need to print out? You know, how do you want to organize it? I like to have one per page, but that's on an electronic document. So you could obviously have more than one per page if you're thinking about like, I got to conserve this paper or whatever. I guess I probably should have mentioned on Friday, because this would mean something to someone doing it on paper. On Friday, when they have the three that they've done, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, there's actually a little table at the top of the paper. That's where Friday is at the top, just so I can get there faster. So I don't always have to scroll all the way to the bottom. But they copy and paste their original into the left-hand side of the table, and then the right-hand side of the table is where they actually revise. So they see the two side by side, which has been very powerful for them to just be able to look and say, oh, they're very different, or, oh, they're really the same. So, you know, when you do that traditionally, it might just be you would have kids, you know, put them physically side by side and say, here's the one you actually wrote now on this new piece of paper, or in this, you know, space that you've left on the paper, you can write it there. Because I have a colleague who isn't quite ready to take this tech plunge, and she still uses all the same stuff I do. She just kind of has adapted it for paper, you know?
Absolutely. All right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No. I mean, I think that we covered a lot of it. You know, I have, you know, for me, this is the first year doing it. And anytime you do something as a teacher, as you all know, it's the worst that you can do. And so you just get in there and you figure it out. And like I said, you know, just occurred to me last week, why don't I have kids search for mentor tech? So you think of things along the way. It wasn't until a month in that one of my other colleagues was looking at it and says, well, why don't you put the Friday thing at the top? And then just tell your kids that's Friday because it says Friday on the top. You know, so you're just making little adjustments along the way.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I really like how it's going. And my kids, you know, on the feedback at the quarter and at the semester, they've talked about how important it is because they get to say things that they want to say. And, you know, how often are we asking kids to do that? We often have a goal in mind and an objective in mind or whatever. And so this is really getting them to exercise their critical thinking skills in ways that they actually like to, even if they haven't traditionally been people who have liked to write.
Absolutely.
And if there's any way that, you know, people want more information, there was a blog post that I wrote about it that I can share with you and you can put on your website. I'm always more than happy to answer questions. I'm on Twitter all the time. So I'm just more than happy to get kids doing this because I think it's really important for them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time.
And thank you. I really appreciate you having me.
You're welcome.
Encourage your high school students to share their stories, discuss building a representative society, and develop their writing skills. With this set of 15 highly engaging lesson plans, you can mix and match to meet your students' needs. Download this unit at rethinkela.com/SJWP.